All right, we started recording.
Okay. Wow. Well, welcome everybody to the latest edition of Indie Film Cafe. I'm your old pal, the Moo Cow, aka Paul A. Presenza. And today I have two co-hosts. First one, we have Mr. Jonathan Moody.
Hey, how are you doing?
And secondly, we have coming back for yet another episode, Miss Sarah Adkins.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome back, Sarah. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
All right. So today's episode is we are finally getting to one of the indie filmmaker of indie filmmakers that are out there. There's a whole bunch we really haven't had a chance to touch on. This time we are touching on one of Russ Meyer's films. And, you know, because he kind of did a lot of boob and butt movies later on, I figured it was probably more appropriate to stick with his classic film. I left my mind, but it's Faster Pussycat Kill Kill from 1966.
How can you forget a title like that?
I know.
Absolutely. Oh, and there was a band named after it and right? All kinds of fun stuff. And it is one of those movies. It's like a drive-in movie classic that has influenced a lot of stuff since then. And we will talk about that. But I guess first we have to listen to some
Music.
And we are back. All right, guys. So I know even Jonathan Moody has heard of the man Russ Meyer, but had you heard of Faster Pussycat Kill Kill?
Oh, yeah. You know, I was familiar with the title, you know, that's about it. I had never actually seen it, but I've never, like, this is my first, like, I guess you popped my Russ Meyer cherry right here. Yeah, we both, you've de-virginized us both. On
and I was going to say, Sarah, what about yourself?
I've never seen any of his films or anything like that. I mean, I've heard the title before, but I could have been thinking about the band. But I did notice that I'm a big Rob Zombie fan, and I did notice a lot of he uses a lot of sound clips from this movie in his music, because I kept recognizing the things they were saying and going, oh, that's a sound clip from the Rob Zombie song I listened to.
There you go. Well, like I said, this is a very influential film. And it fits right in with our whole, you know, core belief of doing independent films. And this one, it's not particularly a stinky film, but it definitely has some weird stuff going on.
Right.
So what do you think, Sarah? Do you think you can kind of talk about what happens in the course?
I mean, I'll agree. It's not a stinky film. It is just a odd film, especially when, you know, you got to think it's like from 1966 and here we are in 2021. So it's a little, you see some things and you're like, okay, but for back in the time, you know, they weren't allowed to show certain things or were not. But I mean, it's basically what looks like these go-go dancer girls who like to race hot rods, who do karate and.
Are you trying to say something?
I never try anything. I just do it. Like, I don't beat clocks. Just people. Want to try me?
They try to race this guy and end up offing him and kidnapping his girlfriend and finding this ranch with this really weird family. and then they, you know, some people die. A lot of people die. But it's a fun, exciting little action movie, really, with a bunch of side boob and cleavage. And it's one of those things where when you're on the spot, you don't remember her name, but the main girl, the main bad guy, you know, girl.
Varla.
Yes. She reminded me a bit of like the old Vampira and Elvira as well. She's kind of like the hot goth chick that I bet you inspired some of those looks too, because the way that her outfit was very Elvira, which I'm pretty sure she came before that. So I wonder if she inspired that look a little bit, but, it wasn't a bad movie. I enjoyed watching it. It was very pleasing visually. Storyline.
Well, technically, dismiss what you're saying, but Vampira did come first.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, but I know she did, but Elvira didn't.
Yeah, that's true.
Her cleavage looked a lot like Elvira's.
That is true. She had like very similar cleavage. So
notice the cleavage in the film, did we?
Well, I mean, it was bouncing around everywhere. It was really hard not to notice it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Russ Meyer is known for that. Russ Meyer is definitely known for that. Now, like I said, his later movies, you know, I mean, he's famous for doing things like Beneath the Valley of the Ultra Vixens back in 1979, Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, 1970, Up in 1976, and a bunch of other movies. In fact, he did a bunch of nudie cutie movies and stuff that probably is better for me showing on Sexploitation Sleazecast for Rebecca Reinhart. So there's a lot more nudity and sex and cleavage because he was doing basically sex comedies, you know, boob-horrific sex comedies. This is kind of,
So those sound fun. I will look.
They're definitely fun, but this was kind of before that, and it's sort of before the sort, just before the big sort of sexual revolution in the movies. And this is at a time when Russ Meyer didn't want to make like a roughie that would only be shown at, you know, 42nd Street, New York City, and that's it. He wanted to do something like a drive-in, a cheap, quick, dirty, fast drive-in picture that he could send out to the drive-in crowd and make some money, because that's what a lot of independent filmmakers were doing back then. So that's what he did. So he kind of went so far, but he didn't really cross the line as far as what you expect in the later Russ Meyer films. But
and I keep forgetting a lot of these movies you're picking are older movies and they are drive-in movies. I keep forgetting, like, if I go in the mindset of this is made for a drive-in, you kind of understand it a little bit more in the sense of, okay, this is meant to be on a big drive-in theater, you know, kind of like said, people are watching it, but they're not watching it, you know, and a lot of action and attention grabbing. Like, it makes a lot of sense when you tell me that.
Sure. And you got to figure this is, you know, mid-60s because it was made and shot in 1965, but released in 1966. And, you know, you've got your sexy girls, you've got your hot cars, you've got your rock and roll, you've got your dancing, you've got everything that's going to keep
all your elements.
Yep, all your elements going to keep all the teenagers who are necking and drinking and doing God knows what else in between.
Right.
And they're going to love it. And but the difference between this and some of the crappier ones that are usually made in the period is that usually they didn't put much effort into it. And some of them are so crappy that they would just kind of be re-released over and over and over. Like a lot of Ted V. Michaels movies are released several times under various names. You know, Russ Meyer didn't really do that.
I noticed this, and I guess we could go into it later when we talk about the cast, but the main girl did work a lot more with Ted V. Nichols, or Michaels, right? Is that how you say his name?
Michaels.
Ted V. Michaels, than he did, she did with Russ Meyer. So I don't know, like, is there a thing there? Do you know if there was a...
There is kind of a thing there. I mean... I guess we could talk a little bit about the cast. So Tora Santana was the person who plays Varla. She's kind of the mean girl and the gang leader, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And she is definitely most famous for this particular role in this particular movie. But she doesn't really go too much beyond that. And most of the rest of her movies, she kind of backslides into some of the crappier kinds of drive-in flicks that, like, yeah, the likes of Ted V. Michaels would do. So she was also in Astro Zombies and The Doll Squad. And she actually, popped in a few TV things as well. But she's very an interesting person. She started off as an exotic dancer at the age of 13.
Oh, wow.
Right, which was like, I mean, I guess back in the day, you could sort of do that and get away with it. But,
and you needed to make money back then too, you know, like sometimes you didn't eat if you weren't out there earning your own money, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like unhappy childhood, unfortunately. And I don't know a whole lot about her background, but it doesn't sound like, you know, mom and kids and dog and cat and comfortable suburbia.
Well,
so
I also heard that she owned her own likeness. And so anytime that, whenever Russ Meyer wanted to change the artwork or re-release the project, he had to get her permission and sometimes pay her all over again. And
oh, wow.
That, that might have been a thing. That was what I was wondering, because I was wondering if you knew anything about that, because I was wondering if maybe that was also a little bit of a reason why Russ just decided never to like work with her again.
It could very well be, because of course the other thing about Russ Meyer, like a lot of our independent filmmakers from back in the day, they were cheap and they didn't want to have to pay any more money than they actually had to.
I'm surprised about Ted, because Ted was also very cheap.
I know. But here's the thing about Tora Santana. She really, really takes that role as if it were her own. And it probably was. It wouldn't surprise me that that character is not based on her. She choreographed all the fights in that film. Okay. She knew karate. She could physically do all her own stunts because she knew what she was doing. She was a fighter. She did all kinds of stuff. So she was a very interesting person. And one of the funny little stories I heard about is Sue Bernard, who plays poor Linda, the young girl there. She told her mom she was frightened of her. She's like, I'm scared of this lady.
I even read on IMDb, because I looked up the guy who played Tommy, because he looks just like Seth MacFarlane. I wanted to make sure they weren't related, because it's just uncanny. And there was this little trivia in there that said that he was so afraid of actually getting hit by her that his teeth would get messed up. So they had to film it in slow motion that she was beating him up. Mm-hmm. So apparently she's a badass.
She was not messing around.
Well, I like it that, Linda, the little girl kept, the biggest thing she kept trying to like explain to these people, which I mean, you know, the whole time is she's killed somebody with her bare hands.
Right? She killed my boyfriend. Why is nobody upset about this?
I know. Well, yeah. And that drove me nuts. That drove me crazy.
Which I don't know if you know, but I am curious. Do you know how old the actress was that played her?
And that's kind of how I was going to get into. So
okay, because she looked really young.
I know. So let's go into our next one.
Yes.
The next one is Rosie, who is played by the wonderful Haji, whom you remember from Double D Avenger.
Yes,
she was wonderful. She's another one of my favorite actresses of the period, and she is another one who began her career as an exotic dancer at the age of 14 in Quebec. So yeah, Russ Meyer found these ladies who, you know, I guess when you sort of grow up like that, you'll pretty much anytime you can make some money and have control over it, go for it. So she's playing Rosie, and she's kind of playing her like she's an Italian or maybe Mexican. She has kind of a thick accent.
I got an Italian vibe out of it.
Yeah. Now, Haji did some more stuff. She, of course, also did more things with Russ Meyer, but she also was in the 1970 production of Bigfoot. She was actually in Killing of a Chinese Bookie, the John Cassavetes film. And she was also one of the Ilsa movies. I think she's been the one with the Sheik, the later ones. And then, of course,
Bigfoot, is that a good movie or a bad movie?
Oh, that's a stinker, dude. Trust me.
Is that a stinker? we did Curse of the Bigfoot.
Yeah,
right?
No, we have not gotten to it yet. It's on my list. Trust me.
All right.
I will say that her makeup in this film looked really, really good.
Oh yeah, Haji was hot in her day. Oh, there's no doubt about it. And of course, we know her from Double D Avenger, which Sarah, you have got to see at some point. It's just wonderful. It's wonderful. And then the third villainess is kind of, I guess, the least evil of the two, and that's Billy, played by Laurie Williams. She was the very tall blonde with the cutoffs. With the giant.
The entire time I saw her, I was like, man, her body. And then my boyfriend looked at me and he's like, you know, you have the same body, right? I'm like, oh yeah, I do. I love her body and that, just her shape and everything. I go, okay, that's me. I feel better now.
Okay. So why did she just want to swim? That was so random.
Right. That was random that she just ended up swimming and then got beat up in the pool and in the pool again.
Yeah, they're just running around doing stuff for kicks. It's just, you know, the one likes to kill people, the other likes to take a swim in her clothes for no reason.
Also, real quick, before you get into the next cast member, I do want to ask this question. So in the beginning of the movie, there's a narrator talking about how vicious some women are or whatever, but like it sounded like these were supposed to be like aliens or something, like or some kind of creature. Right. It was very funny.
Yeah, it's this, and I was going to talk about that. There's this whole, you know, the new woman kind of thing that comes out in the 60s, but it's really it harkens back to like the Dirty Debs and girl gangs that you saw in the 50s. You know, then into the 60s, you had a lot of chick motorcycle gang kind of thing. And then mm-hmm. in the 70s, you ended up having a lot of chick, there were some superheroes, but like secret yeah. agents who came together. Yeah, so there was,
we were making the joke of alien goth ninja girls. We're like, that's actually would be a really cool movie. Let's make that one.
And of course, this film is also a predecessor to a whole bunch of, you know, crazy action oriented stripper movies that are going to come later mm-hmm. on in the 90s and 2000s. And right. a lot of movies can be traced back to this film, which is really cool. As far as Lori Williams go, she's great body. You got to love her. She's really, really good. She doesn't really do a whole lot. She's been in some bit parts throughout the 60s, but she doesn't really go into anything else, which I thought was kind of surprising. I expected her to be in more stuff, but, you know, I don't know. Maybe she just didn't really want to pursue it any further. And then there's boyfriend Tommy, played by Ray Barlow. He's another guy that just kind of does bits and pieces, whereas most of the other cast does a lot more work with Russ Meyer.
I swear, if I will agree with Sarah, if they do a remake of this movie, Seth MacFarlane should play, you know, him.
There you go.
They look similar.
Just like each other.
We thought they might be distant cousins or something. You know?
Right?
Yeah, Tommy the Square who gets his ass kicked.
he does, but like, I mean, in all fairness, everybody got their ass kicked.
Yeah.
By,
right? Everybody did.
Pretty much. And then we have Linda, who is played by Sue Bernard. And you are absolutely right, Sarah. For a long time, mm-hmm. I thought Sue Bernard was like 15 or 16 when she played her. And I thought at least the character was 15 right. or 16. But she's meant to sort of come off that way. But
right.
I can tell you this about the actress Sue Bernard. At the time, like I said, this movie was shot in 1965 and then released in 1966. Well, in 1966, Sue Bernard posed in Playboy. In fact, she was the first Jewish playmate for Playboy.
Okay. Been running some timing trials?
We know how fast we can go. Could time that heap with an hourglass.
Someone mentioned my figure?
In that outfit, what's the mention?
So she wasn't 16 or 15.
Right. No, I had a feeling she wasn't, but I was like, she's probably barely 18 or 19. She had to be really like barely into that things because she just has this young look. It's like, I had a feeling she wasn't that young because, you know, they put her with Tommy, who obviously was older and stuff, but I'm like, well, it is 66, but I had a feeling she's probably be more around 18, 19.
And part of that comes from the fact that she plays her very naive and very sweet.
Right. Well, they wanted her to look like this young, innocent, you know, girl. So they wanted her for that role. They did a good job casting her for that role.
Right. And it also helped with her looking so young that they were able to kind of, like the women could manipulate everybody else into thinking right. she was this like young girl that they were just trying to help
right.
out.
She was petite enough to where they could toss her around like they did and whatnot, you know?
But it
petite
was
and yet very curvy at the same time.
Yes.
It was very creepy with the old man. And I guess we'll get into that later, but like just like him, like I didn't know.
Oh, right, yeah. right. But no, I mean yeah. She was kind of cute and innocent, but at the same time, still dead sexy. That's why she was a playmate, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she probably went on and had a bigger career than anybody else in the film. She was also in Witchmaker in 1969, The Finks in 1970, Necromancy in 1972. She began as a model and her parents were both famous. I think one's a famous photographer and then another worked in Hollywood doing other things. And unfortunately, she passed away in in 2019. But oh yeah, when I first saw this film, as much as I like all of the women involved, Linda was the one who stuck with me the most because she was such a sweetie, and how could you not want to help her when she's especially she goes from the frying pan into the fire between the two groups, you know?
Right.
I liked her and I liked the blonde. Those are my two favorites of the Lori Williams, who played, you know, the blonde. She Billy. I think she's still alive. At least doesn't say anything. So I'm like thinking, Paul, we got to get her as like a grandmother in one of our movies.
Yes. That would be awesome.
I would love to work with her. She's a great actor. But anyway, I love both of them.
So. And then, of course, the old man himself is played by Stuart Lancaster, who is in a whole bunch of Russ Meyer movies, but he was also in stuff like Mistress of the Apes. He was in Beneath the Valley of the Ultra Vixens. He was in a stinker that I'm dying to show you called God Monster of Indian Flats. Oh, my goodness. What a weird movie. That's a mutated sheep movie.
That sounds very much like the Beast of Yucca Flats.
Oh yeah, no.
When I hear mutated sheep, I think the movie Black Sheep, and I'm not talking about
this. This is like the 70s version. He was also in Brain Machine, and probably the most famous thing that kind of made it for him was The Born Losers, which is another film we should probably do. That's the one where Billy Jack, the Indian guy, is fighting the motorcycle gang, and he plays the sheriff in that. And that was like the big drive-in hit of like 1968 or something like that.
16. Well, he had a real like Hollywood career too, because I looked up him, and he worked on like Batman Returns, and he was in Edward Scissorhands. So he worked with Tim Burton, which I'm wondering if Tim Burton was a Russ Meyer fan.
I'm sure.
Because John Waters was a Russ Meyer fan. Yep. Quentin Tarantino is a Russ Meyer fan. In fact, Quentin Tarantino wanted to remake this movie, you know, and this was this just unfortunately never made it past development.
Jack Hill was also a big fan, and you can see, you know, like I was talking about, you know, things like Dirty Debs and Switchblade Sisters. You can see a lot of that gang-related girl stuff, even though these aren't technically a gang. These are just three showgirls, you know, go-go dancers who kind of go off.
Right. Like there's no like rhyme or reason for anything in this movie. There's just like, it's like all of a sudden she accidentally, that's what I call it, because I don't think she was planning to kill this guy. It just sort of kind of happened when she was beating him to, you know,
it's like Thrill Killers or some of the other things that happened back then. It's all based on the Stuart Whitman murders that happened when he was out running around. I think it's the Stuart something other, where he's running around with a little teenage girl, and they just run from one murder to the other when they're asked why they're doing it, because it's fun.
Oh yeah.
incident sort of it shocked America, but it had spawned a whole bunch of different films, and you know, Badlands is probably the biggest example of that. But yeah, it's really, really interesting. And like I said, this is really before, you know, the underground film industry was able to loosen up and do a lot of the sex-oriented kinds of films. There's certainly a lot of stuff that's sexy in here, but really this was just this was basically supposed to be a drive-in movie that was fast, you know, make it fast, make it cheap. You know, I think this was made for under $50,000 and just get it out on the big screen and let the teenagers plop their money down, because it's got everything in there. Even the opening music by the Boss Weeds, they do the opening soundtrack, and then later on it's covered by the Cramps, one of my favorite bands from back in the 80s, which is pretty cool.
They covered it.
Yeah. But one of the reasons I like this film is that, you know, Russ Meyer, even though he has the reputation of being a tit and boob director, he doesn't get the recognition for his cinematography and for his direction, which is actually usually very good, but people don't overlook, you know, they overlook that. But it looks really, really good in this film.
Yeah.
You can't tell me when they were, the places they were shooting, we drove right through that. When we drove through California, that was the very area we drove through.
You know, I guess you probably pointed it out to me, and I would have been like, all right,
yeah.
I've never seen it.
all that desert area with the scrub brushes and the mountains in the background and those little shacks sitting out there. We drove right past that.
And we didn't see any women killing any men. That's sad. This whole time.
If you want to get away with it now, you kind of have to do it secretly.
Yeah.
Right. But there's a lot of stuff, you know, in this film that pops up in other things. You can't tell me you didn't see this and think Texas Chainsaw Massacre in there.
Oh, I did. Absolutely.
We got that vibe. Especially the grandpa almost in the chair who's just trying to rape the little girl.
Exactly.
You're just like, oh no.
Yeah.
And especially with the whole vibe of the two sons, the brothers, you know, who are there with their dad.
One of them's like Leatherface.
Well, you know, that's just dad. Sorry.
Right.
And like one of them's like Leatherface. He's very, you know, very the silent and kind of weird.
Muscular, slow guy who can't really think for himself. Yeah, that's exactly. very Leatherface.
Right.
Yeah.
So like I said, this movie influenced a lot of later films from the 70s on up. And it's because even amongst the drive-in crowd, this movie kind of stands out because of what happens. And it's, you know, over the top and ridiculous and crazy and melodramatic, but yes, it's also fun at the same time.
Yeah.
It's even been described as operatic, you know?
Okay, so let me talk to you real quick about the 1960s movie scene of stuff, because back then, this was not as common. Maybe in the drive-ins, you know, it might have been a little bit more common, but like this does seem like a little bit different, because like you look at it wasn't William Castle, was it? Somebody did a movie that was like Psycho, that was like a complete total, like, you know, but it was more violent than Psycho, you know, or whatever, in the 60s, and those sort of became a thing. Where
you're not talking about Peeping Tom, are you?
I'm thinking of a movie called Maniac, I think, or something.
Oh,
or,
Maniac, okay.
Yeah. I think that's what it was called, but it was like it was a Psycho. No. This was before then. This was a 60s movie. Maniacal or something.
Well, it might have gone under several different names. That's one of the thing about the drive-in crowd, is that you ended up getting, you know, known for one name, but it was put out five or six times with different names.
I thought it was William Castle. It might not have been, but it was somebody who basically took the idea of Psycho and completely just made it. And Peeping Tom was one of them, was one of the movies that was kind of like in that vein, but like it did a movie where it was just too grisly, you know, for that time period and everything. And this seems like it wasn't grisly. It wasn't like, it wasn't violent in the same sense of like lots of blood, lots and lots of blood or something, but it was like, it was pretty like realistic. And that, I think that turns a lot of people, like, you know, weirds people out a little
bit. It wasn't Herschel Gordon Lewis, okay, who was a contemporary who was, you know, painting everything in blood red. It wasn't anything like that. But yeah, I mean, it was physically more realistic, while thematically and narratively more operatic. Everything is very much melodramatic and over the top. You know, none of that stuff needed to happen. Absolutely none of it. You know, it's just crazy. It's like, why did you go crazy just because this guy's beating you in a race? Big deal. You know, why does the argument have to develop, you know, devolve into this fist fight and then kill the person? Why did you have to take this girl and drag her around? You know, it's just all these things so unnecessary.
Why did the guy not believe her every time she was trying to tell her, like, don't get me anywhere near these women, they're trying to kill me? But, you know, he, like, you know, like, a lot of that, you know, like, normally.
It was kind of like the 60s, where he's also just like, you're just a screaming, cute chick. Let's just go back to the house. It's okay. It's okay, honey.
Everything's going to be fine.
It's fine. It's fine.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
I'm going to go make out and almost sleep with the chick you said murdered your boyfriend, you know, after rescuing you and bringing you back.
Yeah.
Right. I kind of put this movie in the same space as Spider Baby, which we did not cover on Indie Film Cafe, but I did cover in Forgotten Horror Classics. This is not a horror film so I can't cover this film in Forgotten Horror Classics, but it's in that same vein of being an oddball, very influential film that stands out, you know, amongst its contemporaries at the time, but is also very, very good and very, very influential.
But it's not a forgotten movie, period.
No,
like
it's not
this
really.
Movie is still talked about today,
yeah. Yeah.
Very much so. Spider Baby, I hadn't heard of, but I until and not until I saw your stuff, but until I saw Sid Haig's table and he was promoting, you know, Spider Baby stuff,
and you know that was one of the reasons why I did that particular episode then, because it was right after Sid Haig died, and it was like,
aww,
there's our tribute to Sid Haig. I don't know if you've seen Spider Baby, Sarah, but you gotta see that one. We have so many movies to show you. So I am curious, because you are the youngest of the group here, so
okay,
what did you think, what did you think about a the movie itself and what it happens, but also how it shows women and not just in a sort of stereotypical way.
Right. Well, I don't normally watch older movies and stuff like that, but I actually really enjoyed this one. Like, it caught my attention. It was full of action, but you know, it definitely had its moments where it's like, was this necessary or is this unbelievable? Like, he wouldn't have been able to push the car, you know, like from squishing him. But some of the unbelievable stuff aside, like I enjoyed it. And I knew since it was, you know, the 60s that it's like, okay, they're gonna want to do a sexy portray the go-go dancer look. And, you know, they're not going to be able to show a lot of things. Because even back then, like, you know, you couldn't even show two people sleeping in the same bed together and stuff like that. So it's like, I know that there was restrictions and rules, but it didn't really objectify women, though. It made them kind of hot and badasses. So for that time period, that's actually pretty cool. It was just, I don't know, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great cast. And like I said, the story was a bit eh, but, you know, no, I actually really, really enjoyed it. And I'm glad I could actually watch it since it is such an iconic thing. And like I said, I recognize a lot of the sound clips from Rob Zombie's music because he, mm-hmm. you know, this all of this stuff inspired him to do what he does. So cool. I heard a lot of it and I was like, oh, that's where that came from. So I did learn some stuff there. But no, I mean, I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was, you know, out of taste or anything like that as a woman or anything like that for the time period. It's actually pretty enjoyable.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you like it. And that whole theme of them crazy teens, I mean, that goes all the way back to the 30s and 40s. Yeah. You know, they had it in the 50s with, you know, Rebel Without a Cause. You know, why are you doing it? You know, well, just for the kicks, you know. So having these young people doing weird, crazy, stupid shit. I mean, come on, look outside the window today. You're still seeing it, except now there's more guns and drugs involved.
Right.
You know, so why not? I mean, and that's what gets the other teens or young people interested. They get to see themselves acting stupid without actually doing it. Themselves.
Right, and with it being a drive-in movie theater, it being very sexual, I'm sure helped all the make-out sessions in those cars.
Sure.
You know, they had a market, they went for it, and they hit it pretty good on the head.
And Jonathan, think about it this way as a movie content creator. I mean, it's a pretty small cast. Mm-hmm. We're talking all you need for this film is a big desert of nowhere, four cars, and a shack.
Right, they fit the cast
and a gas station.
Yeah, and a gas station. I mean, that's pretty, you know.
That's pretty small. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a. I mean, honestly, for a low budget like independent film, you know, because this was not a studio film. This was a B picture, you know. Which I mean, this is a definitive B picture. Like this was. You know, when people talk about B movies today, they're not talking about real B movies. B movies don't exist anymore, because the whole point of a B movie was there was an A movie and then there was a B movie. The A movie was a bigger movie. Like if they had Psycho, you know, that would be the A movie. Then they would have this, you know, right after or whatever. It would be after, I think, right? Like people would stick around for the B movie or something. Or would it open? I'm not sure.
It usually would open. In fact, there used to be whole studios that would, Republic, that's all they did. Monogram, that's all they did were make B pictures.
I will tell you, I had my first experience at a drive-in last year.
Kind of experience.
I was gonna say, what do you mean your first experience?
Well, no, I've never.
I've never been at a drive-in experience.
Okay. I had my first drive-in experience. I've never actually been at a drive-in before. And
No, I never have either. But right before COVID, they were about to build one where I was living, and I interviewed to like be the assistant manager for it. So I almost got to run a drive-in theater, and then COVID happened, and they never opened.
But you guys make me feel old because I was a little kid. I was maybe 10 years old. And my brother took me to my first real monster movie in the drive-in. And it was Night of the Living Dead. And it scared the living shit out of me.
I bet.
And this is like the mid to late 70s. And back then, you could see that. And then there was like that one and a few other horror movies. And then when it came to midnight, that's when the X-rated movies show. So I was terrified on a whole different level.
Right.
Because when I was a kid, and I was like, what the hell's that? Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
That was the drive-in back then.
That's funny. I had never done it. So it was really nice. It was during COVID because a lot of theaters weren't open, but drive-ins were killing it.
We were starting to think that drive-ins were going to make a big comeback because of separation. Even when the concert venue shut down, they were talking about redesigning the whole concert experience where it was like a drive-in theater where you park your car and you watch the show. Like, it was a big talk there for a while of just redoing everything back to drive-in.
I wish they would, and if they did, I would love to see them redo this film, because this movie would be a great, perfect drive-in film.
Yep, and this would be a perfect, like, you know, you watch this and then you'd watch a better movie, you know, or whatever. But this, I mean, like, okay, I want to say this, and I told Paul this earlier. I actually don't find this movie to be a bad film. You know,
I don't either.
Right. Out of all the crazy, kooky movies, especially even the last one you made,
right?
Sarah and I watch. This had a cohesive story.
Well, yeah, we don't always show pure stinkers on here. We do independent films, and this is definitely an independent film. But every now and again, it's nice to throw a curveball and say, okay, it's an independent film. Yes, there's a lot of weird Lord stuff on here, but the way it was made is actually pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm. You had said earlier that you were glad you brought Continuity Monkey out. What is that all about?
You know? If you see, I've seen this movie many, many times.
Yeah,
so
I haven't noticed anything.
Every time I do, you know, I can't help but notice little bitty things here. But I mean, if you pay attention to things like, you know, the early parts where they're driving their cars, and if you pay attention to like the license plates, you'll notice they change.
Oh no,
from time to time.
How does that happen? Like, how did you not notice that? Like, you're shooting something.
Because most people aren't really looking at it, but you know me, I get obsessed with things.
I'm saying, in the filmmakers, why didn't the filmmakers ever notice that?
Oh, because, you know, it's like I said, it was a fast, quick production. They probably didn't have a continuity person to them.
They probably had multiple of the same car for certain shots and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
So they probably didn't care.
Billy's hair when she goes in swimming and then
she comes out, they're like dry.
The
other one is wearing a completely different shirt, so I guess she changed out of her wet shirt.
And then the one who where she's on the ground next to the table and the vegetable falls off and you can see her blink. You know, it's just little things like that pop out after a while. You don't really notice because there's so much crap. There's so much weird shit going on.
I definitely noticed them getting out of the water though, and being completely dry and one of them in different clothes. That was very obvious.
But yeah, it's funny that you mentioned the whole thing with Linda, because that's the only reason I hadn't shown this to some of my other friends, is because like, they're going to be like, dude, what are you showing us here? I'm like, I know she comes off as 15 or 16, but I don't think she really, like, couldn't say it until later on when I found out.
Right.
She just looked young.
Yeah, some people would have felt really awkward with the last one.
With movies like these two, though, it's like, I don't know because I've never seen it, but like, you have to when you do show them to friends, you do have to be a little considerate, because especially like the whole fact that he was trying to rape her and chasing her. There are like the person I watched the movie with can't watch that in films because they have PTSD with it and stuff. So, and I've never seen the movie, so I didn't know scenes like that were coming up, but thankfully they didn't, you know, go too excessive with it. But, you know, they definitely made it very clear what was happening there. That he was chasing her, and you know,
the, you know, if they had been more graphic about it, I wouldn't have put it on this show, because this show, it's not about that. So it comes close, especially even with some of the nudity, it kind of comes close, but you don't ever cross that line.
Right. Like, at least the version I saw on YouTube, it seemed like they cut low or whatever, like when it would be like nudity or whatever, you know, as for stuff. So I feel like we got a censored kind of version of it.
You got a slightly edited version. Even the regular version that I've seen has a little bit more, but not much.
I don't think they're really allowed to show a whole lot then either, though. Like, you got the side boob when they were washing, but that was about it.
Yeah,
that's about as pushing the envelope as much as they could and still get it released along, you know, around the United States in the drive-in crowd. I mean, the drive-in was an area you could be a little bit more fast and loose, but it wasn't, like I said, 42nd Street in the adult theaters in New York City.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so totally.
That would come later. That would be what Russ Meyer would end up evolving into. And like I said, it's kind of a shame, because people forget that he was actually a pretty good director. His cinematography was really good. I don't know whether you guys noticed any of the shots showing the background, or showing the mountains, or showing like the depth of field for some of the shots. It was really, really good.
No, the cinematography was amazing. The direction was great, you know, like he you could tell it was well made, you know, as far as like, you know, there are stuff, like you mentioned, there are stuff where it felt like maybe like they were rushed of time and they were trying to make things really quickly. So like, for example, the scene that just made me laugh so hard was the scene where she's you know, where she knocks into the she runs the car, you know, and hits the guy.
Right, when he just flies.
And then he
just gets back up like nothing ever hit him. But yet the car hits her and she's immediately dead.
Right. Well, she's dying. She has her like big last like little.
Right. But the car hits the big strong ox and he's okay. And he's strong enough to push the car back and keep it from crushing him.
That might be unintentional humor, but Russ Meyer also likes to put a lot of humor in his films. Some of it's kind of toy humor, some of it's not. In this particular one, it felt a little odd, like the whole scene with the gas station attendant, who's another actor that's in a bunch of Russ Meyer movies, but that felt odd and awkward and strange and unfunny when it was clearly trying to be a funny character, and he's like, he can't figure out where to put the gas, and you know, and then he's checking out her cleavage, and he's like, my favorite line is when he's like, yeah, I have like all kinds of people traveling all over the place, and she's like, hey, the gas is not down here, Columbus.
It's fast and true, huh? Boy, that motor's sure hot. You guys really must be moving on these little machines.
Yes, sir. The thrill of the open road. New places, new people, and new sights of interest. You know, that's what I believe in. Seeing America first.
You won't find it down there, Columbus.
I also like how she said, like, in the beginning where he said, do you need anything? Or it's like, you to do your job. You know, like, I was like, what a bitch, like, right then.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, before they wig out on poor square Tommy and Linda, she says, you know, oh, would you like a soft drink? And Haji's like,
oh, yeah.
Soft drink? Are you kidding me? Honey, we don't like nothing soft. Everything we like is hard.
Oh, yeah. No, I immediately caught that. I go, oh, this is like one of my jokes. I like this girl.
Yeah, that was great.
I was disappointed that she didn't make it. She was one of my favorites, you know.
I wasn't expecting all of the females to like die.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And here's the other thing too. And what I thought was very wise about the way it was written these three ladies, if you want to call them that, they were not best buddies. It's like they only did this because there was nobody else to do stuff with it, with, you know what I mean? You could tell there's definitely tension between all three of them. And they all kind of resent the position that they're put in.
I felt like one of them too, though, like, I know they couldn't say it back then. They could just insinuate that there was a love thing going on between the Italian chick and her boss, because like when she was watching her make out with the other guy, with the brother, she just had this look on her face of like, oh no, what are you doing? And she would watch her when she was bathing. So I'm pretty sure she had a crush on her.
I wondered about that. And I didn't wonder that scene, but I wondered when Rosie very astutely is like, why are you dragging this teenage girl along with us? She's an anchor. She's a problem. Get rid of her. Yeah. And Varla's like, oh, I have plans for her. And I'm like, I wonder what those plans are, because this is not going to end well.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, there was a little bit of a kind of a love, you know, thing, you know.
I felt like she's like, you're kind of the top of the chain, you're kind of my boss, I'll do what you say, but I secretly just love you.
Yeah, I'll do whatever you say, babe, you know. Right. Like whether it gets me killed or not.
Whereas Billy is not falling under her spell. She kind of does whatever she wants to. She's more of a free spirit and gets in trouble because of that.
And she knows it. Like, that's my favorite part. Yeah. She like explains to everybody, like, oh man, this is like, I keep getting in trouble with this, but oh well, I'm just gonna keep doing.
I don't really belong here. I don't really want to be here, but I'm here.
Yeah, right. You know, I love that. One of my favorite scenes is the scene inside the that shack, and they're all like eating dinner or whatever, and then she goes into this like long like thing talking about the whiskey or whatever.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Talks like that.
She got really drunk off of a little bit of whiskey.
I know, seriously. She passed out.
And then the other girl ran away again. She's the worst chaperone ever.
Like, I know, right? Oh, and then she leaves her with the fucking lecherous fucking.
Might leave her with the creepy old guy so you can go try to get laid by Beefcake.
Yeah, which never happens at all.
No, nobody ever got any. The cock blocking in this movie was just strong. Because like every time something was about to happen, it's like, nope, the little girl ran away again. That darn girl.
Beefcake guy had no interest. He wasn't really interested because he's like a mental kid, you know, he just doesn't care.
And then they showed him on top of her for like 2 seconds trying to kiss on her, and then all of a sudden, that was like basically it.
Then the trains.
Okay, here's my biggest problem with this movie, though. Like, and maybe I guess they just never really like explained her or talk about her or whatever. But like, Linda, you know, the biggest thing is they don't want her to squeal, right? They don't want her to say whatever. I'm like, she doesn't even know who they are. Like, they're just three random ladies. They don't. She doesn't know where they work. She's probably never going to look at their like license plate and remember that shit. You know, like it's not like nowadays where, you know, like everybody has a cell phone or.
Right. And if you're so concerned about it and you're just going to kill people willy nilly, why not just kill her in the first place?
Right.
Just leave her
out. But they had plans for her. So
leave her out in the middle of nowhere with that, you know, right. And
where there's no phone.
Just leave her at that horrible house and go.
You're right.
Oh, no.
Well, fortunately, that idiot guest attendant told her about, you know, oh, this guy's sitting up there with all this money. I don't know what he's going to do with it. It's just there for no reason. I just waiting for someone to go and steal it is basically what he was implying, you know, which was kind of ridiculous. The other thing that bugged me a little bit is the fact that Varla can't talk. Varla has to scream at everybody constantly. She even yells, you know, they step away and yells about Linda. And I'm like, dude, she's only a few feet away. She can hear you because you're screaming everything.
We said the same thing when we were watching it. We're just like, she's literally right there next to your face and we're still yelling at her.
Like, it's not even that. It's just like I had to keep turning my fucking volume down because, like, this, you know, I was like, all right, seriously, like we
get that you're the tough chick. We get it. You don't have to keep underlining it.
I know. Like, she kind of annoyed me on that, but you know, whatever.
Better both. So it's okay.
But otherwise, it's still a pretty interesting film. And like I said, it's very influential. It touched a whole lot of things later on in life, you know, later on down the road. And, you know, like I said, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is the beginning. A lot of Jack Hill movies, a lot of Tarantino movies, a lot of stuff comes, you can trace back to this.
I don't think that chick, I don't think Billy would have died with that knife in her back.
No, we said the same thing. We're like, that wouldn't kill you.
Yeah, she fell down, and like, I'm just like thinking,
right?
But it's not just this movie that does that.
Right.
There's a ton of movies that have it.
It was just a small little blade in the back that wouldn't have killed her. Like I said, I was watching with my boyfriend who's been stabbed several times. And he's like, that wouldn't kill you. I've done that. I'm like, yeah, no, that wouldn't kill you.
Like, it's just silly.
Even killing Tommy, you know, that wasn't very convincing either. Mm. But no. Yeah.
Well, like you said, they had to do that in slow-mo because he was worried about breaking his teeth.
Yeah, that was crazy. And I just liked how she just pulled his arms in the back and like
I guess it was sweet that Billy got avenged though by Mr. Muscle Man, because when she came back and asked for the knife back, he's like, oh, you want the knife back? You killed the hot chick that was into me. Let me kill you now.
Yeah, the only one who I love, you know.
Right. And she was kind of, she didn't really deserve that though, because she's not the one that killed Billy.
She was just doing
what she was told. Yeah, she's like, it's not my knife. You know, No, it's not my knife. But she was just following orders, so she really didn't deserve to die like that.
Right, right. The other thing that seemed a little unrealistic too, when you look at it from modern eyes, is the whole karate chop thing.
Right.
You know, I mean, that goes back to like James Bond and all kinds of, you know, secret agent movies throughout the time, you know.
Right.
Unless you're Bruce Lee and you're ungodly athletic and strong, doing a little chop like that really doesn't gonna do anything to anybody. It's just silly. It's, you know, it's operatic. It's there to sort of be entertaining, not be realistic.
You know? Right.
And that's fine. For a drive-in movie, it's fine.
Right. No, for driving it's fine. You're making out. You're not going to notice the karate chops.
Uh-huh.
No. Right.
I mean, the whole idea of somebody sort of like murdering somebody right in front of their friends, you know, and then kind of bringing their friends into this whole thing, saying, you know, if you don't come with me, basically, we're all in this, you know, I'll say we all did this, you know, kind of thing. You know, right? Is that's what sort of this is, you know, one of those movies. And you know, it kind of it sucks for the other characters, you know, who actually have, you know, shit going on for themselves.
Right. And like I said, it's because these people really are not friends. They really don't give a shit about each other. They don't really give a shit about anything except themselves.
Exactly. Yeah. But,
and that's,
you know,
that's the problem with these new breeds of women's.
I guess. I don't know. Like, I was really into that. Like, wondering, I thought this was going to go in a completely different direction. Because at first I was like, wait, what is this title? Faster Pussycat Kill Kill. Like, I thought maybe this, like, it was like about like killer, like women that were like pussycats or something.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what to expect either. And I watched the trailer after I watched the movie, because it's right there on YouTube next to it. And then I was like, oh, this is the whole movie just chopped up and out of order. But I basically just watched the whole movie in the trailer. I should have watched the trailer first.
Oh, I mean, if you watch the trailer first and you want to watch the whole movie, why would you do that?
You would have spoiled it.
Spoiled it.
That's what one of the go-go dancer patrons out in the audience is like, keep going, pussycat, keep going, keep dancing, faster. That's where that comes from.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I didn't, that was a little annoying. Like when they said go-go, you know, all the time, and I'm like, is that where they get the name go-go from?
Right. Go-go dancers, go-go, yeah. Go. Hey man, no shaming on sex workers. It's legit work and it's tough, and I give them all the credit in the world.
Hey, I have a ton of friends who do it, so I praise them. In fact, one of my friends asked me if I could come see her last night, and I said, fortunately, I didn't have my car, but I would have, you know, I would have came and supported.
I will come and support them too.
I don't know if that's necessarily true. I don't know, Paul. You didn't do that one time I went, you know.
I don't know. For his work, and we appreciate all the business, you guys.
There you go. There
we
you
do.
Go.
We love you guys. All right, I guess that means it is time for us to do our little review or like
absolutely.
Wrap,
you know. So tell us about Sarah, it. I don't know if you remember about how we do our stinkometer, but
you remind me.
We score our movies on a 1 to 10 scale, by which the lower the score is, the less stinky it is, and then the higher the score, the more stink. So the bigger the number, the more stink.
Well, I will do 2 then. Just because I would do a 1, but there was a lot of scenes that are like really unrealistic and a little laughable. But I'm just gonna do 2 because it was a good influential movie, and for its time, like, it had great actors, great acting, great cinematography. Like this, like I said, the script was the only thing really that was wonky. But when you think of what type of movie it was supposed to be, it makes sense. So, cool. I mean, I'll just give it a 2.
All right.
Wow, well, she's like awesome. Right off the bat.
She jumped right into that too. She was excited.
She was excited. We usually go even at a 0.5, but you know what? 2 is perfect. All right. What about you, Paul? I'm gonna go last.
I would probably say a 2 to 2.5. I guess, you know, originally I would have been a 2.5, but over the time that I've seen it so many times, like I said, I pick up things here and there, and it's a little nuts, it's a little crazy, it's a little operatic and a little over the top, but it's still a lot of fun. And I think 2.5 is probably where I'm gonna land on this. Very influential. I never quite know how people, friends that I show this to, are gonna react to it. I guess they expect it to be much worse than it is. And then when it starts, I guess they expect it to be more violent or more nudity. But it doesn't really go there, so it kind of has to sort of go by the story. And fortunately, most people seem to like it, even with the fact that it's a little weird. But I've always liked it. It's my favorite Russ Meyer film, so I'd say a 2.5.
All right, I'm going to give it a 3. So you get a 2, 2.5, and 3, which is actually a pretty, I think that's the lowest score, close to the lowest score. I don't know what Sledgehammers at Dawn was this year, but
I think that was like a 9 or, you know,
9 or 10. So we're this is lower than that, I think, right?
If it is, it's barely.
Yeah, it's about the same. It is pretty much it's a fun little movie. I enjoyed it a lot more than I expected, actually, because I was expecting tits. That's all I was expecting from because knowing what Russ Meyer was like, so knowing that this movie was more his like tamer movie, which is funny because I always thought for some reason this being so influential and so big that it would have been the less tamer movie or something, you know, and more wild and outrageous. And it was wild and outrageous at times, like, you know, completely bonkers, you know. Like, but it was fun and enjoyable, and the characters were fun. And we didn't even mention the guy who played Kirk, but he was cute, you know. He was like, his character was cute, you know, like he was very helpful. He was always like, you always felt, you know, like you kind of felt bad for him because like he loves his father, he loves his brother, he doesn't want anything happening to them, but he knows how like fucked up his father is. You know, you get a little backstory of how her, you know, he, their father blames the other son, the vegetable, as he's called,
right,
or for whatever, the mother dying. So there's so much into it, like there's so much heart into it that I was just not expecting to see out of this movie. And you know, this would be a movie I'd watch, but I don't know if I'd watch it so much, you know, like it's not something, you know, like there's some movies that are just really good, but you don't need to watch them all the time. I'm surprised you watched this like 20 times, but I'm sure it's like with other people. You know?
It's usually introducing people to it, who, especially people who only know Russ Meyer by large boobs, right. You know. And there are large boobs in this. It's just that they're, A, they're covered, and B, it's not really the point of the film.
No, it's not. And I love that. Like, I love that that's not really, if they did it, it was like for, it wasn't gratuitous, you know, boobs or anything. It was like more to a point. Even the side boob, like all of that stuff was like not gratuitous. It was like, you know, like a lot of it was like if they were in the shower or whatever.
Right, yeah, so it's like,
it was tasteful. Like they had to, you know, they had to wash up, you know, or whatever. Right. Not all of them did, which was a little weird that not all of them were going to go do that.
I just wanted a little bit of sex appeal, you know, keep the audience a little interested, but
well, I also got it as they were trying to stay there, you know, so they were doing everything they could to stay there so they could find that money, you right. know, and everything. Right. So they were like, could we use your, you know, water? Like, sure, then can we eat with you? Sure, can we, you know what I mean? All that yeah. stuff so we could stay, so we could fucking steal your money. And he had it the whole fucking time in his goddamn wheelchair.
Right,
it did bug me how the wind was trying to blow it away and she wasn't picking it up. I'm like, it's blowing away. Please go grab that. Stop talking, grab your money, it's blowing away.
Right.
You're telling that bitch to stop talking?
Come on. Right?
So, Kick, and here's the one question other people have asked me, and I don't know the answer to this. I guess everybody has their own thing. What do you think happens at the end with the one brother and Linda? Do you think they get together?
No.
Well, no. I mean, he still has the property, and I guess it's all his now, so he's going to be very lonely living there. But I don't think she stays. I think they go their separate ways. But, I mean, he just inherited a house.
Yeah, I think he just helps her out, brings her back home, and goes on with his life. Because he is not, like, there was no romance between them.
There wasn't. Right? They really never showed them as a love interest, just right. him yeah. trying to help her.
Yeah, there's no love. I didn't see anything there of that. He was more interested in the
love interest with.
Yeah, and then he kills her, or, you know, she dies. So, like, he has nothing, you know.
Well, I guess he didn't kill her.
He didn't kill her, yeah. She died. And he didn't, you know, so, I mean, whatever.
And
I don't
he's
know.
The nicest of the bunch. There's money, there's property, her boyfriend's dead.
You never
know. I mean, I didn't think so, but I could see that maybe in another alternate universe or whatever kind of thing. Like, maybe that happens, but like,
you know, there you go. There's the hook to get the second film sort of later on, Faster Pussycat again. You know, that's
kill.
These two married and had three kids who ended up becoming, you know, strippers or something. And then they go off and have adventures and, you know, I don't know. You could do all kinds of things with that.
I know. I'm surprised this didn't get a sequel, you know, but from what I've understood, it didn't do well in its initial release. It did well later in revival stuff and became a cult film, but like it initially didn't make as much money from what I read, so yeah. I don't know if that's necessarily the case of why it probably didn't get like a sequel. Or maybe did Russ Meyer even do much sequels, you know, like
well, he did a few sequels of his own, and he ended up doing a kind of sort of sequel of this one later on, but yeah, he would do some of those things later. But I don't know, I guess once the restrictions were lifted and he could just do boob movies, there was a lot more money to be made. Yep. So there you go.
Nudie cuties, baby.
Right. And that's when, and you can go from, you know, Sue Bernard to Kitten the Tabby Dab with her large, you know, things.
Mm-hmm. There
oh,
you go.
There's Kitty. Hi, Kitty.
Yep, there's a kitty. How are you doing? All right. So speaking of cats, pussycats.
There you go. Faster pussycat. Kill, ram.
Be careful with her wanting to kill.
Yeah, no, it's more like snuggle.
Yeah.
No, I've been distracted this whole time because he's been in kill, running around the whole room, ripping down curtains, playing with his toy, eating my food. I've just been very quiet about his destruction. He's
got the zoomies, huh?
Yes.
Outstanding.
Yeah, my cat had that earlier today and we had to kick him out. So
yeah.
All right.
Anyway, Sarah, tell us. So we got a show that's coming back out in June. Right? Yeah, horror film lovers.
The horror film lovers podcast. I haven't picked a movie out yet, but I am scoping out a few. We will have a special guest on the next one. Yeah. Like we always do. I think we just did one that you picked out, and it was pretty fun. We keep releasing them, keep making them, and they've been pretty fun.
Yeah, so we got one in June that we've already done, mm-hmm. but we're going to record another one, and then we're just going to try to finish that first season off, and then we're done with that. And so also you've been doing a lot of other stuff with us, a lot of podcast stuff with us. So.
Oh yeah.
It's been fun
jumping on whenever you guys need a guest. And
that's kind of where I was going to go, is hoping that you'd come back and do some more with us.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It seems like you'll watch just about anything.
Right. No, I don't have a job. I'll just lay here and watch whatever movie you tell me to watch. I mean, I'm laying here watching movies anyways.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
So, I mean, and Paul likes to pick like the older films. I like to pick a lot of the newer stuff, you know, or whatever. So it's sort of fun. You know, I might pick a movie. I think like the most I pick is from like the 90s or something, you know, because that's sort of what I know is 90s and up.
Yeah.
You know,
but I tend to pick newer, like 2000s movies.
Yeah. So there you go. And then Paul's here, you know, I've seen these films back in the, you know, 70s and 80s and shit, you know, and everything. And I'm like, God damn.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't have seen them if you didn't put them on this show. So you introduced me to apparently a classic that I never would have seen otherwise. So, you know, it all works out.
Outstanding. Well, exactly. I have a giant pile of movies that we're going to get through at some point. So I just want to say thank you both very much for coming on the show. And please tune in next time. We'll have another movie that'll be Mr. Moody's turn.
Uh-huh.
And thank you very much for joining us on Indie Film Cafe.
Thank you, guys. And make sure you guys check out indiefilmcafe.reviews, sickflickproductions.com, indiefilmcafe.podbean.com. And if you'd like to throw us a buck, you know, help us out, we got a Patreon. And we do Patreon only content on there. So if you just spend $1, just $1, you get a Patreon only thing. And so there you go.
I would love to get Sarah to do a couple of our older shows to do a Patreon only. I'd love to see her.
Yeah, definitely. We would love
Fungicide. Keep that one in mind. We got you for Fungicide.
There we go. That works.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. And check out patreon.com/indiefilmcafe if you guys want to help out. And everybody, have a great one.
Have a good night.
Bye.
You want to prove something, chickies? Let's see who the real chicken is.
While living fast, and if you want to end up giving your all, let me call. Pussycat is living reckless, Pussycat is right.